Chapter 34. Sought that delight, and the favorable opinion of his tutor determined him to try for a mathematical scholarship in the Easter of his second year. He wished to gratify Sir Hugo by some achievement, and the study of the higher mathematics, having the growing fascination inherent in all thinking which demands intensity, was making him a more exclusive worker than he had been before. But here came the old check which had been growing with his growth. He found the inward bent toward comprehension and thoroughness diverging more and more from the track marked out by the standards of examination. He felt a heightening discontent with the wearing futility and enfeebling strain of a demand for excessive retention and dexterity without any insight into the principles which form the vital connections of knowledge. Deronda's undergraduateship occurred 15 years ago, when the perfection of our university methods was not yet indisputable. In hours when his dissatisfaction was strong upon him, he reproached himself for having been attracted by the conventional advantage of belonging to an English university, and was tempted toward the project of asking Sir Hugo to let him quit Cambridge and pursue a more independent line of study abroad. The germs of this inclination had been already stirring in his boyish love of universal history, which made him want to be at home in foreign countries, and follow in imagination the traveling students of the Middle Ages. He longed now to have the sort of apprenticeship to life which would not shape him too definitely, and rob him of the choice that might come from a free growth. One sees that Deronda's demerits were likely to be on the side of reflective hesitation, and this tendency was encouraged by his position. There was no need for him to get an immediate income, or to fit himself in haste for a profession, and his sensibility to the half-known facts of his parentage made him an excuse for lingering longer than others in a state of social neutrality. Other men, he inwardly said, had a more definite place and duties. But the project which flattered his inclination might not have gone beyond the stage of ineffective brooding, if certain circumstances had not quickened it into action. The circumstances arose out of an enthusiastic friendship which extended into his after life. Of the same year with himself, and occupying small rooms close to his, was a youth who had come as an exhibitioner from Christ's Hospital, and had eccentricities enough for a Charles Lamb. Only to look at his pinched features, and blonde hair hanging over his collar reminded one of pale quaint heads by early German painters. And when this faint coloring was lit up by a joke, there came sudden creases about the mouth, and eyes which might have been molded by the soul of an aged humorist. His father, an engraver of some distinction, had been dead 11 years, and his mother had 3 girls, to educate and maintain on the meager annuity. Hans Meyrick he had been daringly christened after Holbein felt himself the pillar, or rather the knotted and twisted trunk, round which these feeble climbing plants must cling. There was no want of ability, or of honest well-meaning affection, to make the prop trustworthy. The ease and quickness with which he studied might serve him to win prizes at Cambridge, as he had done among the blue coats, in spite of irregularities. The only danger was that the incalculable tendencies in him might be fatally timed, and that his good intentions might be frustrated by some act which was not due to habit but to capricious, scattered impulses. He could not be said to have any one bad habit, yet at longer or shorter intervals he had fits of impish recklessness, and did things that would have made the worst habits. Hans in his right mind, however, was a lovable creature, and in Deronda he had happened to find a friend who was likely to stand by him with the more constancy, from compassion for these brief aberrations, that might bring a long repentance. Hans, indeed, shared Deronda's rooms nearly as much as he used his own. To Deronda he poured himself out on his studies, his affairs, his hopes, the poverty of his home, and his love for the creatures there, the itching of his fingers to draw, and his determination to fight it away for the sake of getting some sort of a plum that he might divide with his mother and the girls. He wanted no confidence in return, but seemed to take Deronda as an Olympian who needed nothing and egotism and friendship which is common enough with mercurial, expansive natures. Deronda was content, and gave Merrick all the interest he claimed, getting at last a brotherly anxiety about him, looking after him in his erratic moments, and contriving by adroitly delicate devices, not only to make up for his friend's lack of pence, but to save him from threatening chances. Such friendship easily becomes tender. The one spreads strong sheltering wings, that delight in spreading, the other gets the warm protection which is also a delight. Merrick was going in for a classical scholarship, and his success, in various ways momentous, was the more probable from the steadying influence of Deronda's friendship. But an imprudence of Merrick's, committed at the beginning of the autumn term, threatened to disappoint his hopes. With his usual alternation between unnecessary expense and self-privation, he had given too much money for an old engraving which fascinated him, and to make up for it, had come from London in a third-class carriage with his eyes exposed to a bitter wind, and any irritating particles the wind might drive before it. The consequence was a severe inflammation of the eyes, which for some time hung over him the threat of a lasting injury. This crushing trouble called out all Deronda's readiness to devote himself, and he made every other occupation secondary to that of being companion and eyes to Hans, working with him, and for him at his classics, that if possible his chance of the classical scholarship might be saved. Hans, to keep the knowledge of his suffering from his mother and sisters, alleged his work as a reason for passing the Christmas at Cambridge, and his friend stayed up with him. Meanwhile Deronda relaxed his hold on his mathematics, and Hans, reflecting on this, at length said, "Colin, old fellow, while you are hoisting me, you are risking yourself. With your mathematical cram one may be like Moses or Mahomet, or somebody of that sort who had to cram, and forgot in one day, what it had taken him 40 to learn." Deronda would not admit that he cared about the risk, and he had really been beguiled into a little indifference by double sympathy. He was very anxious that Hans should not miss the much-needed scholarship, and he felt a revival of interest in the old studies. Still, when Hans, rather late in the day, got able to use his own eyes, Deronda had tenacity enough to try hard and recover his lost ground. He failed, however, but he had the satisfaction of seeing Merrick win. Success, as a sort of beginning that urged completion, might have reconciled Deronda to his university course. But the emptiness of all things, from politics to pastimes, is never so striking to us as when we fail in them. The loss of the personal triumph had no severity for him, but the sense of having spent his time ineffectively in a mode of working which had been against the grain, gave him a distaste for any renewal of the process, which turned his imagined project of quitting Cambridge into a serious intention. In speaking of his intention to Merrick, he made it appear that he was glad of the turn events had taken, glad to have the balance tipped decidedly, and feel freed from his hesitations. But he observed that he must of course submit to any strong objection on the part of Sir Hugo. Merrick's joy and gratitude were disturbed by much uneasiness. He believed in Deronda's alleged preference, but he felt keenly that in serving him Daniel had placed himself at a disadvantage in Sir Hugo's opinion, and he said mournfully, "If you had got the scholarship, Sir Hugo would have thought that you asked to leave us with a better grace. You have spoiled your luck for my sake, and I can do nothing to amend it." "Yes, you can. You are to be a first-rate fellow. I call it a first-rate investment of my luck." "Oh, confound it. You save an ugly mongrel from drowning, and expect him to cut a fine figure. The poets have made tragedies enough about signing oneself over to wickedness for the sake of getting something plummy. I shall write a tragedy of a fellow who signed himself over to be good, and was uncomfortable ever after. But Hans lost no time in secretly writing the history of the affair to Sir Hugo, making it plain that but for Deronda's generous devotion he could hardly have failed to win the prize he had been working for. The two friends went up to town together. Merrick to rejoice with his mother and the girls in their little home at Chelsea, Deronda to carry out the less easy task of opening his mind to Sir Hugo. He relied a little on the baronet's general tolerance of eccentricities, but he expected more opposition than he met with. He was received with even warmer kindness than usual, the failure was passed over lightly, and when he detailed his reasons for wishing to quit the university and go to study abroad, Sir Hugo sat for some time in a silence which was rather meditative than surprised. At last he said, looking at Daniel with examination, "So you don't want to be an Englishman to the backbone after all?" "I want to be an Englishman, but I want to understand other points of view. And I want to get rid of a merely English attitude in studies." "I see, you don't want to be turned out in the same mold as every other youngster. And I have nothing to say against your doffing some of our national prejudices. I feel the better myself for having spent a good deal of my time abroad. But, for God's sake, keep an English cut, and don't become indifferent to bad tobacco. And, my dear boy, it is good to be unselfish and generous, but don't carry that too far. It will not do to give yourself to be melted down for the benefit of the tallow trade. You must know where to find yourself. However, I shall put no vote on your going. Wait until I can get off committee, and I'll run over with you." So Deronda went according to his will. But not before he had spent some hours with Hans Merrick, and been introduced to the mother and sisters in the Chelsea home. The shy girls watched, and registered every look of their brother's friend, declared by Hans to have been the salvation of him, a fellow like nobody else, and, in fine, a brick. They so thoroughly accepted Deronda as an ideal, that when he was gone the youngest set to work, under the criticism of the two elder girls, to paint him as Prince Camaralzaman. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.